Camilo Mejia was an 8-year veteran of the U.S. Army, a staff sergeant, and a squad leader. In October 2003, he returned home on leave from fighting in Iraq. He never returned. After he turned himself in, the Army rejected Mejia's application for conscientious objector status. In May 2004, a court-martial sentenced him to a year in jail on a charge of desertion. He was released in February. Since then, he has been speaking out against the war and trying to put his life back together. We've reached Camilo Mejia at his home in Miami. Good morning, Camilo.
Good morning, Lisa.
So when you came home from Iraq in late 2003, why did you decide not to return to finish your tour of duty?
Well, I must say that from the very beginning of the war, I had political opposition against it. I had been perhaps not too involved personally because I was reading the news like everybody else and thinking how the war didn't really make sense politically in terms of weapons of mass destruction and stockpiles of chemical weapons. But I still went because, in part, because I was afraid to oppose the war publicly. I was afraid of being tried by a court-martial. So I deployed hoping that it would be perhaps even just a show of force. There was incredible opposition against the war. But once we got there, you know, as everybody knows, the war started, and then we started getting involved in more direct combat missions. And we started seeing how, you know, innocent people really paid the price of war. Our first mission in Iraq for my unit was to run a POW camp, prisoner of war camp. And one of the things that we had to do was to keep prisoners awake for periods of 48 to 72 hours. And we did this by banging sledgehammers against walls next to the prisoners who were hooded and tied. And then, you know, if that didn't work, you know, we would perform mock executions, you know, to make them think that, you know, that we were about to shoot them in the head. You know, we did this with pistols, or we were told to do this with pistols. And this is the first mission that we have there. And, you know, it begins to transform, the opposition begins to transform from political and impersonal to more personal, moral, involved opposition against the war, because no longer am I reading about these things, no longer am I just watching this on the news, but I'm the one actually doing these things. I'm the one, you know, performing the abuse, the one occupying, the one killing civilians. And I mean, it's just, there's so many things, you know, why one should oppose war. You also have, for instance, you know, things that have nothing to do with the politics of it. Things that have nothing to do with whether, if you agree with war, things that have nothing to do with whether the war is justified or unjustified. For instance, you know, the ambition of officers who want to get promoted and, you know, want to get the medals and the awards, you know, and how they do things deliberately to instigate firefights, you know, against every training that we've received as infantrymen by means of, you know, making ourselves predictable, you know, giving away the element of surprise. Doing the same missions over and over. You know, just a number of things that we did that we weren't supposed to do just so that we would instigate firefights. In the process of doing this, you know, soldiers lose their lives. You know, they lose limbs. You know, they become traumatized. Civilians get killed, you know, who had absolutely nothing to do with the war. But at the same time, it's really difficult, you know, to come up with political or moral or philosophical analysis of the war, because you're being shot at every day. You know, you're being bombed every day. There's a bomb. There could be a bomb in every corner, you know, every curve. You know, there's no such thing as a front line in Iraq. You know, the war is being fought everywhere, you know, from mosques, schools, hospitals, roads. You get bombed, you know, you get mortared, you know, where you live. So it's really hard to really sit down and analyze the war and say, okay, I don't want to participate. You know, you just want to get out of there alive. But once I come home, you know, I have more clarity of mind. I have more. Hold on a second. You have more, I guess, more peace, you know, to make decisions, you know, to actually sit down and hold on a second. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, my 5-year-old daughter is here with me.
That's okay.
So, you know, you start searching for purpose, you know, you start searching for justifications, you know, you start asking yourself, is it worth it, you know, doing all these things, you know, killing all these people, exposing ourselves so officers can get promoted. And, you know, you start trying to find reasons, and all you find is, you know, it's just a bunch of lies. And, you know, it's really difficult, or at least it was for me, you know, to say, okay, there's no reason why we should be fighting this war. You know, all these innocent people are dying, but, you know, I'm still going to go back. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't in good conscience say, okay, I'm going to participate in this war simply because I signed a military contract, and it's my duty as a soldier. It's not my duty as a soldier. And even if it were, you know, before being a soldier, I was a human being, you know, with principles and morals and a conscience. So, you know, I made the painful decision, and I have to say it was a painful decision, not to return. And it was painful because it meant, you know, not going back to my squad and the people in my unit, who I really care about, and also because of the possibility of, you know, going to jail and, you know, God knows for how long, and being away from my family, which in the end did happen. But I can't say that it's a decision that I regretted. You know, I mean, I feel much better now. I feel much stronger as a human being, you know, because I actually did what I believed. And, you know, I'm active, you know, in my opposition against the war. You know, I'm an anti-war activist. You know, I'm a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And, you know, I continue to oppose the war and to do my political activism until the war is over, and, you know, even beyond that.
You've written about how some people call you a hero while others call you a coward for what you did. You say you're somewhere in the middle. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, you know, I don't think, first of all, I don't believe in heroes. I really don't. I think, you know, ordinary people are put in extraordinary situations where, you know, they can do extraordinary things, you know, but I don't think that necessarily makes them heroes. You know, what actually makes, if you're a religious person, miracles happen is, you know, the unity of ordinary people, you know, doing extraordinary things, you know, coming together, you know, organizing an anti-war rally, you know, voting off a president, a group of soldiers, you know, putting down their weapons and saying, we're not going to fight this. You know, those are all small things that once you put them together, you know, they bring about, you know, tremendous change. Heroes by themselves, you know, if you do believe in the concept of hero, don't really make these type of things happen, you know. And the people who did call me a coward, you know, they in a way they were right, you know, because I went to the war in part because I was afraid. Because I was afraid of being tried, I was afraid of precisely being called a coward, because I was afraid of, you know, spending time in jail. And out of fear, I went to a war that I opposed. But they're wrong because most of the people who call me a coward, you know, call me a coward because they think that I did not return to the war for out of fear of being killed. And I have to say that there was that fear of being killed, but there are worse fears in war. You know, there's the fear of, you know, killing innocent people. There's the fear of losing your soul in the process of, you know, saving your own body, you know, making it home alive. And I believe that the fear that was at play, you know, in my whole participation in war, I guess like the strongest fear, the one fear that one should look at is the fear that led me to participate in the war. You know, not participating, not further participating in the war, was a greater fear than actually going back to combat. You know, because it's a very dreadful thing to tell the military, look, this war is oil-driven, I'm not a mercenary, I'm not going to fight your war, I'm a conscientious objector. A lot of people feel the same way, but, you know, they rather take their chances in combat than to actually make a stand for themselves. So it's not, I wouldn't call that cowardice at all.
You went into hiding for a period of time after you went away without leave, but then you decided to turn yourself into the authorities. What motivated you to do that?
Well, when I first came back, actually, there have been plenty of irregularities about the way that I have been extended and deployed. First of all, my contract had ended by the time I allegedly went AWOL. I am not a citizen of the United States. I am a citizen of both Costa Rica and Nicaragua. And there's an international treaty between Costa Rica and the United States where, you know, citizens of, you know, either country cannot be forced into military participation, you know. So basically, you know, the United States cannot involuntarily extend my contract, yet they did. They also violated an army regulation saying that, you know, non-citizens can't stay in the military more than 8 years unless they've applied for citizenship. And a number of other irregularities that I pointed out to the military command when I came back, and they pretty much agreed with me. They said, yeah, you're right, you know, you should not have been deployed, you should not have been extended, you should have never left Florida, which is my state. Yet they all told me, but your leave is expiring and you have to go back because your leave is expiring. You know, so it didn't really make a whole lot of sense. It was like there was this unwillingness, you know, to uphold their own laws and regulations. And I didn't really feel that I could be tried fairly, you know, by, you know, the military legal bureaucracy. So I went and sought civilian counsel. I applied for conscientious objection. I put together a case. You know, we had witnesses. We had several arguments. But the intention was never to, you know, separate myself from the military. The intention was always to not go back to the war, but that's a separate thing from allegedly going AWOL, you know. I did not go back to the military because I did not think that the military would uphold its own law, so I went out and sought civilian counsel. But they're separate things. The objective was never to separate myself from the military. I had a legitimate claim for being discharged, and you know, my intention was always to, you know, fight that claim in court, and that's what I ended up doing.
You were then court-martialed and convicted on charges of desertion and missing a movement. I understand that the court refused to hear evidence about the violations of international law and army procedure you witnessed in Iraq. What happened at the trial?
Well, we had, as part of my defense team, we had former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark, who testified to the applicability of the Costa Rica-United States Treaty to my case. The judge heard him and decided not to allow the argument to be brought before the panel. We also had an expert in international law, Professor Francis Boyle, who testified that, you know, the war had been illegal because, number one, you know, the war can only be illegal on two counts. One is the in self-defense, and two is, you know, with the approval of the UN Security Council, which we had none. We had neither, you know, before going to this war. We still don't. And also because of the many violations that are happening in Iraq, you know, like, for instance, you know, things that I witnessed and participated in, you know, the POW camp, you know, sleep deprivation and all these things that are happening right now. The abuse of prisoners is completely illegal in international law. The judge heard that but did not want to allow it into the arguments to be brought up, you know, before the panel, which is a jury. Key witnesses, you know, that we had that would have testified to the illegality of my deployment, you know, witnesses from the military also were not allowed to testify. Basically, the judge and the prosecution, the only thing that they allowed was, you know, evidence as to whether I got on the plane or not. You know, they brought it down to the issue of whether this soldier got on the plane when he was supposed to get on the plane, you know, to, you know, go back to his unit in accordance with his leave. And they did not want to listen to anything dealing with the illegality of the war or what troops are doing in Iraq to Iraqis. They just did not allow the war to be put on trial. We did put it on trial anyway because we had several reporters who wrote about it, but more in a public way, you know, not so much a legal way. And then this year in May, I attended a court martial, the court martial of sailor Pablo Paredes in San Diego, and it was the same thing. You know, they brought in an expert in international law, Professor Marjorie Kahn, who also put the war on trial. The military judge did not want to listen to it. He did say that, you know, every serviceman and woman, you know, has you know, a reasonable claim for saying that the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, and even Kosovo and Yugoslavia were all illegal, but he said that more as a joke, you know. But they really did not ever allow the war to be put on trial. They never look at international law. They never look at what we're doing in Iraq. It's always, you know, a matter of, you know, whether he or she went back to the war when he or she was told to. Right now we have another court-martial going on July 28th of Sergeant Kevin Benderman, who's a conscientious objector, and decided not to go back to the war, you know, because of what he saw and because of the violations that he saw and the destruction of the country that he saw and because the war is illegal. And same thing, you know, they're charging him with desertion, mismovement by design. They even added a charge of larceny. So it seems as though the military is still unwilling, you know, to look at, you know, our own violations of the law, our own violations, you know, in terms of, you know, going to war. You know, they're just bringing it down to, like, the individual case, you know, whether the soldier did or did not get on a plane or get on a ship.
Well, thank you very much, Camilo, for joining us this morning.
Okay, if I could say one more thing. For people who are interested in supporting Sergeant Kevin Benderman, they can go to his website, which is bendermandefense.org. And there are several ways that they can help him. You know, just go to the website and maybe they can donate money or, you know, write letters or do some other thing, you know. But just please do help. You know, military resistance is really important, you know. It was a key element in the ending the war of Vietnam. And I think that war resistance should be supported, you know, every step of the way. So bendermandefense.org.
Great. Thank you very much, Camilo. Camilo Mejia is a former U.S. soldier who is with Iraq Veterans Against the War. He was on the line with us from Miami.